Oh, good evening, everybody. Appreciate you guys making the effort coming out on a Wednesday night. It's a little colder. I'm always impressed by the people who make it a priority to come out in the middle of the week to pray with the church corporately. So tonight, we're continuing our journey through the book of Numbers, through the Torah specifically, and then now we're drilling down to the Numbers. We're doing the second half of the book of Numbers. Last week was Massimo. He did the first half, and I'm going to be continuing chapters 26 to 36. Now, as I was thinking about the book of Numbers, I was thinking about what was a good illustration. And it brought me back to when I first started as a pastor. You know, every year probably that we go out and we go to the Shepherd's Conference, or we pick a pastor's conference to go to. And, you know, Pastor Randy was all the national parks guy. And so we went out my first year and we visited Yosemite National Park. And Randy, being Randy, wanted us to get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and we had to be out at the park well before sunrise. We're in the middle of the park. We start hiking. It's completely dark. It's cold. It's in the 40s. We're going through icy patches and snow up this mountain, and I was thinking about that, and basically, it was an all-day hike. We get all through the mountain. There's places we can't get through because of ice. We had to kind of reroute, or they closed. We finally get up to the top of where we're going. There's a beautiful snow-melted river going through over the side of the cliff. You can see the entire valley. Beautiful, very picturesque. And as I'm up there, I'm thinking it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, we started well before the sun came up, and we're only halfway done. Are we going to be able to get back before it gets dark and colder? And are those patches that were wet going to ice up on us? And so I start thinking about these things, and I'm kind of like, let's get going, guys. So we finally start on our way, and I'm kind of picking up the pace, and I'm trying to trek down there, and Randy and Anthony are back walking like it's a stroll in the woods. They're not getting my message. And I'm like, come on, I keep looking over my shoulder, and they're not moving any faster. And then Pastor Jack has kind of caught me, and he's kind of passing me, and he keeps going. And I couldn't keep up with him a little bit. I'd speed up and see where he was. He kind of was outdistancing me. And then after a while, I kind of lost him. But I'm like, all right, he's up there somewhere. I'm just going to keep going. Worst case scenario, I'm out of this. You know, I don't know what's going to find me in the middle of the night here. You know, snakes and bears and wolves and lions and tigers or whatever else is in the Yosemite. And so as I'm going for a little while, little did I know, but later on I found out that Jack hid behind a tree and let me go. And so I'm just walking, thinking Jack's in front of me, I'll be okay or something like that. At least I'm close to him. And, you know, when you're going through the woods, you know, usually you're looking forward and you see landmarks and things that are going to trigger your memory. But if you ever have to turn around, it looks completely different. But I knew that, so I would always look behind me. But I got to a point of going down my little path, and I thought I was on the right way. And then it ended with a huge rock wall, a huge cliff. And I said, oh, that's not good. And the only other way was down the cliff. And I said, somewhere I think I made a mistake. And so I circled back. And as I'm circling back, I don't know where I really was. And so I'm going back, and I said, I'm going to keep going. I'll just keep going because I'll just figure out, I'll get back on the path I was on before. And so, but, you know, it just wasn't working out. And then I started saying, I think that's the path up there, or maybe it was down there. So I started trekking through the woods to climb to get back to the path. And long story short, I lived. I'm here. It was a trek through the wilderness, and you start thinking about being lost in the middle of the wilderness. And if I had trekked down and I had to cross that river, and it was, you know, I was getting lost. Like, if I was thinking, like, in relation to Numbers, like, what if God, a voice from heaven, said, "I'm going to split the river for you, and you could walk across on dry land"? Like, wow, that would be fabulous, right? Wouldn't that be great? Or you keep wandering and you're lost for days, and you know, sandwiches appear from heaven, or water bottles magically, you know, appear. Those would be huge, incredible things that God would be doing. But that's literally what God did for the Israelites going through the wilderness. And you would think they would learn from those things. You think that they would appreciate God literally delivering them over and over in the book of Numbers and throughout the wilderness. Last week, Massimo did the first half of Numbers. That was chapters 1 through 25. It's not split in the middle based on chapters. It's split based on the storyline. The first half of Numbers is Generation A. The second half of Numbers is Generation B. First half is chapters 1 through 25. Second is Generation B, which I'm doing 26 through 36. So God was continually testing them through the wilderness. Will they trust God? Will they have faith in God to deliver them, to fulfill his promises to them, including bringing them out into the promised land? But instead, they were faithless. They did not trust God over and over. They murmured, they complained. There was multiple rebellions against leadership and against God. God was testing them, but rather they continually tested God over and over. So the last test was in, Massimo covered last week, was in chapters 1 through 25, was that God said, let's send the spies, 12 spies, into the promised land. They're going to spy out the land for 40 days, and then they're going to see what I'm giving you, and they're going to come back and get you guys excited, bring encouraging reports. They should be excited. They should be eager to see what God was preparing to deliver into their hands. Instead, 10 of the spies feared man over God. They feared what they could see over what they could not see, and they caused the people to rebel. The people then refused to enter the promised land. The people said that we're all going to be killed if we entered the promised land. It would be better if we died here in the wilderness. Well, in God's anger, he pronounced his judgment on Generation A. The 10 spies died. He said that for every year, for every day that the spies were in the promised land, you're going to have 1 year wandering in the wilderness. So God allowed them to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. He said, since it would be better for you to die in the wilderness, your wish is granted. Everyone 20 years old and older will die over the next 40 years, and you will not go into the promised land. They attended funerals for the next 40 years until that generation all died away. How sad and discouraging and depressing. Only Caleb and Joshua, two of the 12 spies, had faith in God's promises, and they came back excited to see what God would fulfill in his promises to them. And only they were allowed to enter into the promised land. So that brings me now to my section, the second half of Numbers, chapters 26 through 36, beginning at the end of the wilderness years. It was coming to a close. They were camped on the eastern side of the Jordan River, looking across the river into the promised land. They've been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years now. Now Generation A had died off. Now Generation B is there, poised, ready, looking over the river, and they can actually see the land that God was giving them. There's anticipation in these chapters. There's excitement. There's something that they've heard about all of their lives since they were teenagers or younger, how God was going to actually deliver the promised land to them. It led to a lot of questions. Is there a war coming, conflict? How would God do this? The stage is set at the end of the book of Numbers. Will Israel, which is now Generation B, will they be faithful? Will they trust God? His presence was with them. Will it continue? His power was with them. Will that still be the case? His ability to deliver them over and over through those wilderness years, out of trouble, into his promises, was God going to continue to do that through this new phase? Back in my generation, there was a popular basketball player. He was good. His name was Karl Malone. His nickname was the Mailman because he always delivered. So every time he would score, they would say, the Mailman delivered again. Well, that's what God was doing for 40 years over and over, continually delivering Israel out of situations and into his promises. In the book of Numbers 26 to 36, it's, did Generation B learn anything from their past experiences with God? Will they apply what he taught to them in the wilderness? We see that in the beginning of these chapters. These are the same questions that we live by and what God does in our own lives. We see in James chapter 1, God tests us by putting us into trials and tribulations. He puts us into our own wildernesses sometimes to test our faith as well. Will we trust God, how he has revealed himself to us already, and will we trust in what he has promised to us already? So Numbers 26 to 36, we have a new generation, Generation B. Generation A is all dead now. There's new opportunity for obediences. There's renewed promises by God. There's a renewed calling for them to be faithful, to believe, to trust God, to go and take the land. There's new preparations that God was doing in them. They're going into this new land. They weren't going in alone. Finally, going into that long-awaited promised land they've been waiting for decades. It all started in Exodus that God had said, let my people go, that they may worship me. They were being set apart by the Lord for worship, as Massimo talked about last week. God required them to worship. God was equipping them to worship. So briefly, I'm going to go over the chapters 26 to 36, not in very much detail, just hitting the big points. Chapter 26 starts the second census, and that's why it's called the Book of Numbers. Chapter 1 was the first census, which was Generation A, and chapter 26 is the second census, which is Generation B. The funny thing is that there's really no overall population change. It's been pretty much linear for those 40 years. Well, why? Because God killed them all, right? God killed all of Generation A. So there was no overall increase, but yet there was relative population changes in all the individual tribes. God was fulfilling his promises even through that and his judgments. Some were blessed, some were cursed on their family because of their family's disobedience or their idolatry or their rebellion, refusing to obey. That's important because God said that he's going to divide the land based on tribe size, which is then indirectly blessing of their obediences. That's sort of like heaven. Rewards, we get crowns in heaven based on our obediences in this life and now, based on our faithfulness. And as we look forward into our own promised land, God doesn't change. Chapter 27 is the land inheritance laws for the daughters of Zelophehad, and also Joshua was chosen to be Israel's next leader. Moses was rejected, Joshua was chosen. There's no partiality with God. We see that in Romans 2:11 and Ephesians 6:9. Moses had rebelled, he was self-righteous, he sinned, he disobeyed, he complained at the people. So Joshua was chosen. Joshua is more of a Christ-like leader example. In fact, Joshua is synonymous for the name Jesus. It means God saves or God delivers. Joshua was a faithful man. God commanded them to go into the promised land, and he provided Israel a new leader to take them into that promised land. Chapters 28 and 29, God reminded them of all the offerings that they were required to give to be able to approach him. And then he gave them new offerings that they were expected to do in the promised land. There were daily offerings, there were Sabbath offerings, monthly offerings, Passover, Feast of Weeks, Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles. God was preparing them to worship, to be a worshipful people, a holy people, a set-apart people. God commanded them to almost be continually worshiping him constantly. That means lots and lots and lots of animals being sacrificed. I did some quick math. That was thousands and thousands every year. Specific animals, perfect, blemishless animals, rare animals. It was a minor percentage of the overall animal population. So it kind of begs the question of how would they be able to get all of those specifically required animals for all these required sacrifices? To be continued. So chapter 30 was laws about making vows, specifically for daughters and then their fathers. Chapter 31 was vengeance on the Midianites. So you probably heard that story, Balaam, right, the evil prophet. He told King Balak, who was king over the Midianites, that he couldn't curse God's people. God would not allow that. However, to get around that, get around God, he said that you could use the Israelite laws against them, God's own law against him. And what you could do is have the women tempt the men of Israel, which did happen. So God judged the Israelite men, which had already happened, and he punished them in chapter 25. That was last week's. Now the time had come for God to punish the Midianites, King Balak and the prophet Balaam, for their rebellion against him, thinking that they could outthink God and use his laws against him, kind of the way the Pharisees did with Jesus. God said to kill everyone and their people, their whole lineage, then take everything of value. This gave the Israelites the capital to start to become their own nation, kind of investment seed capital. This also gave them all the animals they needed to provide for themselves, like I spoke about earlier, in the promised land, because now manna and quail was coming to an end. It was time for them to provide for themselves. In addition, God gave them the specific required animals that they would need to worship him. God provides for what he commands. Chapter 32, the 2.5 tribes first settle on the east side of the Jordan. Chapter 33, Israel's journey from Egypt is reviewed, and he also gives instructions for the conquest of conquering Canaan. God, through Moses, reviewed Generation A, their past, to remind Generation B to learn from those experiences, to learn from their parents' failures, which will lead to Generation B's future blessings. God also gave them instructions on how to conquer Canaan, to trust him, to deliver, to provide, and to fulfill the promises to them. They weren't alone. The question was, will Generation B be different than Generation A? So it's kind of culminating at the end of Numbers, this drama, this theater, this building up, this anticipation to go take the land, this excitement, coming conflict. Was there going to be war? Would God continue to do miracles like he had done all through the wilderness? Chapter 34, God appoints the boundaries of the promised land. Don't go beyond what I've told you. And also he gave them leaders who were specifically appointed to divide the land to each tribe so there wouldn't be confusion. Chapter 35, where the cities for the Levites and the cities of refuge. So God commanded and also provided for the support of the people that he called to religiously serve him and the congregation. I'll talk about that a little more in a minute. And then chapter 36 was the female land inheritance laws. The ladies were not forgotten. Even though their father had passed, they weren't married, and they didn't have children, they weren't left out. So my two main points tonight, which are on the vine if you have that, the two themes that we see in Numbers, chapters 26 to 36, that we can apply to our own lives and our own spiritual journeys. The first one is the worship that God requires from us is the worship that God provides to us. So in the Torah, we could see that. We've been covering the Torah again for many weeks now. We see that in Genesis 22. God required to worship him a burnt offering, a sacrifice from Abraham. He said, go up the mountain, use Isaac as the offering. And then what happened? He went up on the mountain, and then God provided the sacrifice. God provided the ram. He still expected Abraham to worship him, but he provided it. And he expected Abraham to trust and to obey, and then he provided that sacrifice. We see that also in Exodus chapter 12, verses 35 and 36. The Israelites were leaving Egypt, and they looted them on their way out. And on the opposite side of Exodus, we see in chapter 36, verse 6, God says to come in to worship him. In order to do that, build me a tabernacle. And the people bring way too much to Moses that he had to stop them. Well, where did they get all of that stuff? Not out in the wilderness. They got that when God led them out of Egypt and they looted it. So God provided for what he was eventually going to command. The same thing for the artisans and the craftsmen that were needed to build the tabernacle. They couldn't go out and hire people. God had already provided them in the congregation, and we see that in chapter 35, to be able to build what he had required. Also in the Torah, there was explained by God that there was a narrow way to approach him, to rightly worship him. I covered that when I did Leviticus as well. So God gave Israel the law through the Torah, throughout the Torah, I should say, and he said to follow it to be able to approach him. But of course, the law is crazy. It's complicated. It's hard to follow. It's hard to put it into literal practice. So then God, in Numbers chapter 3, verse 36, he redeems a certain people. He sets them aside, the Levites. He gave them a whole spiritual vocation, the whole tribe, whose full-time job and ministry and career, their whole genealogy was to teach the law so that they could approach him. What God required, then God provided for them. Later in Numbers chapter 35, God then provided for the Levites to have cities to live throughout all of Israel, to do what he commanded them to do for the people. Even though the Levites didn't have any land rights in the promised land, he gave them what they needed, cities scattered throughout the land of what he required of them. And then as we read and already covered in chapters 28 and 29 in Numbers, how God commanded his worship, reminding them of all the sacrifices and all the offerings that he had already required, and then he gave them even more sacrifices to do. Lots of those animals were required, like I said earlier. But then he provided all those animals for the foreseeable future through the conquest of the Midianites. Also in that conquest, God gave them more financial resources to successfully start up their nation. So you see the pattern of God, again, of what he requires from us, he provides to us. All these are examples, and what we see throughout the book of Numbers is what God was doing through Israel. And is that what was real? And that was revealing about how they needed to approach God and how to worship him exclusively on his terms. Yet they were not left on their own either to struggle, to figure it out, or fend for themselves to fulfill what God had required of them. That would be cruel if God had required things that he knew they couldn't do. God provides what he requires. So some general application about that is to trust God. Learn from that. He is trustworthy. He has shown it, he has proven it, he has given us examples. He will provide for what he requires from us. Also, to look for and believe that he will provide, he will give you what is needed to do his will. The counterpoint is, if he's not providing, then maybe he's really not requiring what you think he is. So be content where he has you. This can be a counseling theme many times. People think God is requiring something that he has not given to them. Even though it may be expensive, costly, and sacrificial, if God requires it, he will provide it. He's not requiring things that are impossible for us to do. And some specific application to think about, that your offerings, your tithes, all of our finances, our time, our talents, our marriages, our parenting, our spiritual gifting, where he wants us to serve, even attending or coming to church. That was kind of my calling to becoming a pastor. I was praying about that. My son had married and moved out. My daughter, my next one, was in college. She was on a path to graduate, and my next one was driving and getting ready for college. And I said, Lord, what do you want me to do with all of this extra time that I have since my family was pretty much raised up? And that's when God put it in front of me to become a pastor. He said, you raised your family, now raise my family. I never felt that calling before, but as God had equipped me and opened up that, then God had different expectations for me to step up as well. So the second point is that, the second theme in Numbers, is that God gives us current experiences, setting us up for his future blessings. God gives us current experiences, setting us up for his future blessings. So we see this in that Generation A versus Generation B. God gave Generation A all those same experiences, but they refused those blessings. So God also used those experiences to then teach Generation B with that same purpose, to set up Generation B for their future blessings in conquering and going into the Promised Land, which he did because they learned from those experiences and they did trust God, unlike Generation A. It was a new generation with new opportunities for obedience. God was doing new preparations in them for a renewed calling and a renewed promise. God gave them all those experiences which he taught Generation B, which then led to Generation B's future blessings, and we see that in the book of Joshua. Speaking of Joshua, Joshua himself, he was chosen to lead for the first time in the battle against the Amalekites in Exodus 17. He led the army successfully against them. Then we see Joshua again up on Mount Sinai. Moses took him up there, which must have been an exhilarating, unique experience. And then he came down and saw the people worshiping a golden cow. I'm sure that influenced him as well. He was then chosen to be one of the 12 spies, which he came back with the exciting report as opposed to the other 10 spies. And that's why he was a faithful man and God had chosen him to replace Moses in Numbers chapter 27. God gave Joshua all those experiences and he was one of the best remembered leaders of Israel's history. God also did a number of miracles under Joshua's leadership. Another example, perhaps, is that Israel was beginning to experience now what they would experience more fuller in their future blessings in the Promised Land. So it's kind of a taste of what's to come. God was doing things in them, giving them blessings, little pieces of what was going to come down the line. That's like what we get when we have experiences of heaven here on earth, before we get that fuller blessing, when we get to go into our own Promised Land. An example of that would be progressive holiness or sanctification. God is allowing us to overcome sin, become more like Christ. We don't experience that fully until there, but yeah, you get little tastes now of experience of that, which encourages us to our future destination, our future blessings. If you want a little more, you can look at Hebrews 4 and Stephen's sermon in Acts 7 before he was martyred. Both places explain this section of scripture in Numbers and in the wilderness that God was using these experiences in Generation B to bless Israel in the physical Promised Land. But the point was not just earthly blessings, but eternal blessings, where we will dwell one day with God in the future, which was the purpose of these experiences and the patterns that God gave us to learn from in the book of Numbers. Like he did for Generation B, we too need to learn from that, and we need to apply that. We need to learn from Generation A, and not to follow in their footsteps, but in Generation B's for our own lives. So this is God's revealed pattern to us, that God will give us current experiences in our lives, setting us up for his future blessings. So the question is, do you see this as a pattern in your own life? Because God says it is. That's what he says he does. Do you look for that in your own life to use what experiences that God has intentionally given to you to be useful to him in the future and to look to future blessings over immediate ones by thinking this way? This is biblical thinking. This is called wisdom in the Bible. So understand the patterns in the book of Numbers. Live looking at your current experiences with an eye to be useful for the future, to be a blessing, and to be blessed by God. So thinking about Numbers chapters 26 through 36, these are your two takeaways to meditate on and to pray about tonight. The worship that God requires from us is the worship that God provides us. And also God gives us our current experiences, setting us up for his future blessings. So what a great God that we get to worship and serve, and how he prepares and how he provides and how he equips us to. These are inspired reminders that God put into Scripture for our instruction and application as he continues in the same patterns today in our own lives. So please pray for that tonight and for our church for yourself to think this way as he expects us to do. So let's close in a word of prayer. Father in heaven, Lord, I just give you thanks and praise. You don't leave us wandering in the dark. Instead, you are a bright light in our path. You've shown us these things, these ways you operate, that you still operate in the lives back then, in our lives today. May we learn from them, may we grow from them, may we gain wisdom, so that when you put us in these trials and tribulations, when we feel like we're in the wilderness, that you are still there. You are a light to our path. I pray, Father, that we are a congregation growing in that, that we are not flailing around, that we are not availing that we are not giving up on you, that we are not trusting you, that we are losing our faith in these situations like that generation in the wilderness did, that we are not testing you when you are testing us, but may we be found faithful like Joshua, like that second generation, Lord, to take upon us and use these experiences to then grow and to be useful to your kingdom, and then also for our future blessings as well. Please bless us, and may we pray faithfully tonight about those things. In your name we pray. Amen.